Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the podcast where two rivals meet, Crystal Palace and Brighton. When geography fails, neighbourly pettiness prevails.
This week at Brighton, two very different claret and blue performances, more injuries and only 1 point at the end of it.
And this week at Palace, two games on the road, two wins and 6 points moves us up to fourth.
We'll discuss all of this and much more, because this is Seagull Eagle.
Hello, Andy.
Neil, I've been looking forward to tonight. How are you?
I thought you might be. I'm okay. Not as good as last week, I have to be honest.
Well, I've got an important question to ask.
Already?
Did you enjoy your week of being above us in the league?
it feels like butter moment, Andy. It really does.
And do you know what? I've got a feeling there's going to be that yo-yo effect between the two of us. Because all you got to do is win or... Actually, no, hang on a minute. You've got to win two now
Stop
to be above
it.
Us.
Stop
you?
It. Stop it.
Anyway, look, Neil, don't worry, mate. Because it wasn't all bad, was it?
Pretty much, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, look, do you know what? I was thinking about how we were going to do this pod, and I appreciate that there's going to be some words of wisdom coming my way, and that's fair enough. That's what this pod's about. It's been a bad week for me. It's been a really good week for you boys. So look, because it was a double game week,
it was
for both of us this time for a nice change. I thought we'd do it a little different. As we had midweek games, I think probably best thing to do is let's do like a little short version of the midweek games, and then talk about this weekend's games as well. You up for that?
Yeah, mate, I'm fine with that.
Okay, well, in that case then, let's start with your boys. Let's do a double. Let's talk about both games. Give it to me, both barrels. Let's just see if I can get through this. Talk to me about the Crystal Palace games against...
What one do you want? Do you want the win or do you want the win?
Oh, hello. We started early.
Okay, sorry.
Let's go in chronological order. So let's start with Burnley and then finish with Fulham. Go on, go for it.
All right. Well, feels like quite a long time ago now, this game. We had a chance to bounce back after our two defeats in a row, right? So, and obviously playing against a Burnley side after losing twice, it kind of, and look, they're on a four-match losing run into this game. It felt like the perfect banana skin to make our life even worse, didn't it? You know what I mean? When they're kind of set up and you're like, everyone goes, well, you should, that'll put you right.
Well,
you should win that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much like you in the Conference League, isn't it?
Exactly. Larnaca. Yeah, all right, move on. But we successfully avoided the banana skin and we got the 3 points. Mm. I don't think it was the prettiest of games. Neither of these two were the prettiest of games. Neither of these two games that I'm about to talk about were showcases or examples of brilliant football. However, they were examples of how to get 3 points on the road.
Yeah, and I was going to say that actually. It's a very much two games that you just drove out the results, didn't you? You know, you just grinded them out.
And that's
really
what you got to do when they're coming thick and fast, right? So talking about lineups, Lerma replaced Sarr, because obviously Sarr has still got his poorly foot, isn't he?
Is there any idea of dates of that, how bad it is? I suppose he's off to AFCON next, is he?
As I said to you in the last pod, I mean, I think Glasner was a bit more optimistic, thinking that he might get a game or two in before AFCON, but personally don't think that. I mean, why do I know better than him? I don't know better than him. I'll be surprised if we see him before AFCON, but let's see. Top line, Neil, I think, look, Palace nicked it 1-0, spoiler, at Turf Moor, and it was that great Daniel Munoz header, that pinpoint forward ball from Gehi with Munoz ready at the back post to head it across goal. Did you see it?
I did see the goal, yes.
Yeah. It was a nice, well-worked goal. And that whole kind of Munoz on the back post kind of beating his marker, come from basically defence to end up in the opposite box. Look, it was his fourth goal in the season. And it's kind of, when Munoz scores, it's one of two things. And he did that last week. So I think, it was a nice goal and it was... It was a difficult performance for us, I would say.
What do you mean by difficult?
Defensively, we held firm, but Burnley had a lot of the possession. They kind of put the pressure on us. And I think we also a bit like Brighton with your superkeeper who's kept you in quite a few games. Henderson very clearly kept us in this one.
Yeah.
There was that big, strong fingertip save from Henderson. Did you see this?
I did see that. That was a really good save, to be fair.
Well, it was so good. I was actually sat there watching it with my partner and she said to me, he didn't touch that. I was like, he touched it. He didn't. And then even after watching the slow action replay, the first one that they showed you on the telly, you still couldn't see if he touched it. Then you watched the ultra slow one, the really, really frame by frame one. And you could see the whole ball change direction and go onto that post. And then obviously afterwards, you know damn well he touched it because his fingers really hurt him. He was in a damn sight load of pain after that. I think he made a couple of strong saves actually in that game. And I think he kept us in it. Mm. But as I said to you, it weren't pretty in points, but we got the points and that's what matters. Things that we probably need to mention, I think Burnley pushed hard in the second half.
Yeah.
They had a couple of chances, including that shot that hit the bar. But apart from that, kind of, we held firm until the final whistle. It did get a bit nervy at the end, though, I felt.
They were going for it. They were really trying, to be fair to them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, they're not a great side, but what they are at home are more than they are away. And I think at Turf Moor, with the fans behind them, they were trying their best to get something out of the game. And I was looking at the stats, and the quality of chances weren't that great. And I think that was the biggest issue for them. They didn't really break you down too much, did they?
No, it just felt like they were capable of doing it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It wasn't a particularly comfortable watch in that second half. And obviously, look, yeah, it got nervy near the end. That goal band effort from Burnley was cleared off the line by Richards. I don't know if you saw that, but that was, it was one of the ones where the keeper's beaten and you're like, oh, hang on. Richards is there, and very calmly booted it away. Wasn't totally comfortable until the ref blew up. Yeah, I think, look, we only had one attempt on goal in the second half.
Mm.
Which is telling, because we normally come alive in that second half.
Well, I mean, in total, you only had, what was interesting, you had three shots, but all three of them were on target. Which is something pretty good for you guys, isn't it, really, in that sense? Because you always bemoan the fact that when you do get into good opportunities, you squirm away wide or whatever. In that sense, you were quite proficient.
Yeah, we were. But we did look tired again. And there's no getting out of that. We looked tired. But do you know what was great? Defensively, we held it. And obviously ended the day at that time in fifth. So obviously when you're trying to work your way up the league, you've got to win against the likes of Burnley, and I think, look, as I said, we avoided the banana skin. And most importantly, like, I just didn't want to get that third loss in a row, because then the rot starts setting in, didn't it?
And you didn't get any injuries or anything like that, did you, either?
No.
In that sense, like, it was a really good midweek for you, because you went away to a tough place to go for any team. You got a 1-0 win, you got a clean sheet, you didn't get any injuries, and you rolled on.
And we rolled on, and I think that, look, there were a couple of substitutions used and stuff like that, which was quite nice to see. I feel like Glasner's gone into December now, and a little bit like most of the men out there who have kind of got now, just like me, to the 8th of December and gone, better do some Christmas shopping. I think Glasner has got to December and gone, better start using substitutions now, earlier than the 80th minute, because I'm going to need them. And so I think we saw some people coming off the bench, and most importantly in the game that we'll talk about in a minute, the Fulham game, I think he is starting to use that squad a bit better.
And he's
now
got to, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
Like, well, he hasn't, though. That's the funny thing about it, which is that he should have been doing that for a while,
but
he's just trusted in these players. But I think he's been forced into some changes because of the injuries.
Sure.
And I feel like
fatigue, I'm sure.
And fatigue. Mm. And I feel like he's now having to manage people's time.
Yeah.
So it's got to that point of no return, really. And also, he's got to address his critics, right? Because he openly went out there and slated the club for not doing business.
Yeah.
And pretty sure Steve Parish has probably reminded him that there's been people sat on that bench that haven't been used.
Yeah.
So I would imagine this might be a little bit of a nod to that.
Fair enough.
So yes, a win at Burnley and a good start to the week. We then move on to Fulham, Neil.
Yeah, this was the Super Sunday game, the 4:30.
How things have changed. Palace Fulham.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Fulham, to be fair to them, they'd come off, although they lost in the midweek, they'd come off a really good performance. I mean, they were 5-1 down against Man City at one point in the midweek game. And then to bring it back to 5-4, so close to getting it to 5-5, which would have been an absolute amazing result for them. So they must have been, in some respects, on a bit of a high.
Well, they're no mugs, Fulham.
No,
right?
Absolutely not.
And obviously, whilst they're not in the strongest of positions now, there's evidence to suggest that they're going to get themselves out of any trouble.
Oh, and, definitely.
And I think I can only see them going up the league.
Mm.
Talking about Palace then, two changes from that side that beat Burnley on Wednesday that we just spoke about.
Yeah.
This is the interesting one. Nathaniel Clyne.
Oh, yes, I saw this.
Yeah.
I was so shocked because when I saw him on the pitch, right, hands up, I didn't see the beginning of the game, right? Because obviously the Brighton game was just before it, so I was getting home. But I saw Clyne on the pitch and for a split second I thought, oh, okay, maybe Munoz got injured or he's just tired, so they're bringing him on. He actually started.
Well, I mean, this is the squad depth issue. And we spoke about this about a month ago.
Yeah, big time. You were right up against the fact that if Clymer's having to come on the pitch, you were in big trouble.
And if Munoz gets injured, then Clyne is the natural person in that position, whilst also probably not a wing back as such too much, really, I wouldn't say, in terms of at the age of 34 being able to get box to box regularly up and down the pitch. But to be fair, he did all right. Obviously, that all happened because Munoz is out with a swollen knee, which he picked up at the Burnley game. And the medics basically said that he's not in tip-top condition. And Glasner basically said, if you ain't tip-top, you're not playing. It sounded to me like he wanted to play.
Right.
Really funny, though, because there was a report of a football player who'd got arrested. Have you heard about
this? Yes.
And I don't know who it was that got arrested, but there was a lot of rumours circling around that it was Munoz that got arrested.
Right. So when he didn't start, that people putting two and two together and coming up
because he's the same age as the footballer that did get arrested and all of a sudden was left out of the lineup. So there was a bit of a conspiracy theory. By the way, that is not true, I don't believe.
Well, we don't know.
But
you don't know, Andy. It could be, couldn't it?
Well, Glasner confirmed that he is out. Unless Glasner's in on it, we'll see what happens. But obviously, Sarr was also injured still. So you had Nketiah starting in Sarr's position. So it was actually, I think it was one of Nketiah's first starts in the Premier League, if not his first start this season. So you had Clyne and Nketiah in for Sarr and Munoz. And me being the Palace fan that I am, I have my favourites. And not in terms of like character and all that, but in terms of the people that I feel like affect the game, right?
Okay.
And them two are the two that I feel like are kind of epitomise the system and how we play it and getting stuff done with Sarr and Munoz. Like they are kind of the outlets, aren't
Understood.
They?
Yeah.
So a game without them two, when the lineups came out, I won't tell you what my words were that I used. I was like, we're in trouble. We've got a problem here.
Yeah.
And obviously, Kamada then moved back into midfield to partner with Walton because of the little rejig that we had. So yeah, really quite nervous about it. How would 34-year-old Nathaniel Clyne cope with the pace, right? Mm-hmm. Bearing in mind that when he was brought on in the second half of one of the games that I went to go and see, I think it was AZ or one of the other games that I saw, they absolutely exploited him in that game and all the balls were suddenly kind of coming towards him on that side and he wasn't dealing with it.
Why wouldn't you?
At the end of the game, Glasner said that his man of the match was Clyne, which is interesting, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I think that's nice. That makes sense, doesn't it? You've got to give him confidence because Glasner knows there's no other substitute for Munoz at the moment, at least until January the 1st. So
I think he'll be back next week anyway. Anyway, look, the game got underway at a quick pace. Early chances from both ends and Smith-Rowe hitting just wide after a deflection from Gahey. So it was early squeaky bum time, Neil. And then straight away, pretty much after that, Mateta's shot wasn't powerful enough to beat Leno. So I think then on 20 minutes, Palace provided a lovely passing movement. And there was moments where you're like, ah, this looks great. There was also loads of moments where the likes of Kamada and Pino, probably the two biggest suspects of this, where they are passing the ball and just completely in the wrong angle and straight into the hands of, you know, you fought for 20 minutes to get this ball back and then it's just like, oh, here we go again then. So there was a lot of that going on. But in between that, there was just moments of just, you know, that football fan watching beautiful football where you're like, you make that noise.
Do you know what it is? Like, I think there are certain formations that when done right are really easy on the eye to watch with the way that players are obviously in certain places on the pitch.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, I get it with Brighton, every so often whenever they play three at the back, you look at it and you go, oh, I like that. And that makes sense. You know, it just, the angles and everything.
This
and I think
good. Yeah.
Adam Wharton in particular, I think he is someone that fits that formation so well with his abilities and his techniques and his awareness of where everybody is on the pitch.
Yeah.
It is something wondrous to watch sometimes with his passing.
Going to quote you up on that, if that's all right.
Yeah, can do.
Yeah, so I think there was this lovely movement between Wharton, Mitchell and Gaye on the left wing, right? And bearing in mind, you think about the tactics of this game now, we've lost our right winger,
yes.
Right? And he's the one where, if you have a look at that heat map that Sky Sports loves to talk about, a lot of it goes down the right.
Yes,
and then we spread
course.
It to the left to Mitchell to kind of mix it up. But a lot of it goes down the right. And all of a sudden, you've got a 34-year-old veteran on the right-hand side who is potentially not going to be able to keep up with that pace. So we were throwing a lot more down the left-hand side.
Yes.
And Mitchell was superb in this game.
I think that was clear, wasn't it? There was very obvious. I mean, it's the first time I'd watched, because I watched most of the game. I think I watched the last hour of the game, basically.
Yeah.
And it was very clear that obviously, for obvious reasons, they were using Mitchell much more. And he surprised me how good he is going forward. Because I've always looked at him as a very good defender, but he's added so much more to his game, hasn't he, this season?
Yeah, it's literally chalk and cheese from where he was as a brilliant tackler of the ball, which is where he started out, wasn't it? And he's, I mean, look, academy graduate, you just love to see that, right?
Absolutely.
You love to see a kid who's grown up with it and now a first teamer, but not just because there's no one else, because I genuinely think he's one of the best in the country now. Mm. And a lot of the big pundits are now kind of campaigning for him to make it to the World Cup. I do think he could bring something to it.
I mean,
played for England.
I agree. Yeah. No, I know he has. And there's not many natural left-sided players that are in those positions. And we seem to be constantly searching for one. And it is strange that Mitchell hasn't had another look in yet.
It is weird. It's not like it's his first call-up. That's the bit that I don't quite understand. So he must be on a list. But anyway, so from that lovely passing movement, we digressed a bit.
Yeah,
the ball ended up in the box. It's all right. And Nketiah was in the box and fired it past the keeper. And here's the thing. It was that goal, Neil. It was that goal that I've been wanting to see for the last six or seven games. You know that goal from open play?
Yeah, I know.
Where you've passed it through the defence and you end up with an attacker in a decent position, but not like, it's not one-on-one at that point.
No.
And all he does is he just has to step it past, create a bit of an angle, and he shoots.
Yeah.
And Nketiah did what he does really, really well and what he did so often for Arsenal. But we haven't had, like, Mateta hasn't kind of been doing that in the last five or six games. He's slightly been off the pace.
Right.
So Nketiah coming back in, it was just like a breath of fresh air. And I was like, that's a different type of goal than we normally score.
And also a
goal scored by an attacker. Not a defender.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Most of our goals recently are coming from the back four.
I think it was nice to see, personally, I think it's nice to see Nketiah just growing in confidence as well. You've seen it over the last few games. Now he's getting a few more minutes and stuff. He's starting to understand the system. I mean, obviously the goal that he actually scored, he's sort of on the other side of the pitch to where he should be in some respects, but he's gone over there. Him and Pino have had a couple of passes. Obviously Wharton has made a fantastic pass in. I don't think actually it was actually going to be four Nketiah, was it? It was probably going to go to Kamada, I think. He's probably where he was aiming for.
That was the point of it,
yeah. And if he cuts in, and I agree, I think as an England fan, watching Nketiah do that, you know, if he can go on a run and start scoring goals, he might find himself in the World Cup squad, you know.
And not only that, he will get a lot of starts now because, as I say, Sarr ain't coming back anytime soon, I don't believe. So, the fact that Nketiah can now play on the same pitch as Mateta, and I don't know, I've got a good feeling about that bit of it.
Well,
a really good feeling. Fulham, although down a goal, did look good, Neil.
They were very good.
They looked very good. Yeah, they and were. They were creating some really nice chances. There was moments this game where it was like end-to-end stuff, right?
Yeah.
And Smith Rowe broke through, but unable to beat Henderson. He made a superb save again to keep us in it. And then another fine save a few minutes later from Iwobi's volley, which was quite... I mean, look, two really good saves back-to-back. It does make him look a little bit easy, which is why you don't kind of appreciate it until you watch it in the heat at the moment.
Yeah.
This is the thing. We had this conversation earlier, didn't we, about the whole kind of watching the super slow motion.
Mm.
And it's not until you kind of... you don't, because we're so used to watching replays in slow motion. Right?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And it just plays down everything, doesn't it? It makes yeah. it look so easy. Yeah. And then you watch it in full speed
full
and you're
speed.
Like, how the hell has he done that?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
he is phenomenal. Anyway, we then had a pretty clear penalty shout. And this is one thing I did want to talk to you about. I don't because a lot of the news outlets, and if you look at match reports for this game and stuff like that, they haven't even mentioned this. And it proper wound me up because there's quite a few decisions that did actually go against us. And I'm not, there's no sour grapes because we won the game.
Yeah.
It was frustrating for me though, because it was another ref who loved the whole wave on, play on situation. It felt like that was his agenda for that day, regardless of how many limbs someone had lost and how long they were crying on the floor for.
So talk me through it then. From your perspective, why do you think that's a penalty?
Well.
So explain it first in case anyone hasn't seen it.
Anderson took out Klein. I mean, whether it was a penalty or not is up for discussion because
okay.
it didn't actually, I don't know whether it was in the box or not because of the angle,
yes.
right? But it looked like it was very close to the box.
Right.
Anderson was in the box and Klein was coming into the box. It's all according where they deemed that to have happened.
Yeah.
And of course, Anderson basically stuck his, he looked like he was about to do a squat,
yeah.
right? It's probably the best way to describe this. So he's about to do a squat in the path of where Mitchell was already running into.
Yeah.
And he basically did a squat in the opposite direction, well, kind of at a 45-degree angle from where the ball was coming in. So, and it went to VAR, they looked at it and said that his foot was planted, so therefore the player ran into the foot. And I'm like, well, hang on a
okay.
minute though, why does that change? And this is a little bit of my beef here, because how does that change anything? If he's a player now allowed to plant their foot and do a squat in front of the ball to block the ball and the defender? It doesn't matter whether his foot was there already or not. He was in the path of the ball and he didn't get the ball.
It's an interesting point, actually. At what point does a plant become a plant, and at what point does it become a foul? Because a plant would suggest that they mean that he was there long before the attacker was there, as it were.
Yeah.
But it all happened in an instant.
Mate,
so.
And I mean, the pundits were like, that's a foul.
Mm.
And I re-looked at it, and I just can't understand. I can't understand how it wasn't, but I also can't understand how, well, I know why more people aren't talking about it, because we won the game.
Mm.
But it does concern me that it went to VAR. They looked at it over and over again and thought that. Concerning.
Mm.
Then, look, 7 minutes before half time, the equaliser came.
Yes.
Wilson played a clever 1-2, and it was beautiful with Jimenez, wasn't it?
It was just a wonderful passing move. And then to finish it off with that, it's such a strange way to score a goal when he hits it, he sort of stabs it with his left foot outside of his left foot. So it's almost like curling away from the goal.
Into the top corner, though.
But it was just a beautiful finish. Great move.
I just love the directness of that 1-2. And I mean, it was like, it sounds really arrogant to say this, but you don't do that to Palace. That's like, you don't.
It does sound very arrogant.
Do you get what I'm saying, though?
Like, no,
that's
not really. What do you mean?
It's not the type of goal we concede.
Right.
Right? We've okay. like, look at our defensive record, second only to Arsenal or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like the goals we concede are set pieces.
But
and things like
the reason
that.
You conceded that goal is because I think most teams would concede that goal. It was just a fantastic
move. That's
what
move. I'm saying. It was a moment of brilliance.
It was.
And I. Do you know what I did?
Go on.
I sarcastically applauded it.
Well, yeah.
Because I mean, I was like...
I could understand
it. You can't
it.
Argue with that.
It was a brilliant goal. Really was.
Yeah, I'm not... I mean, and also, 1-1 into half-time, you kind of think, that's probably about right.
Yeah.
Probably about right. And also, I was quite happy that whistle blew, because I felt like they were, after that goal, they
yeah.
were gaining momentum. And
yeah.
It felt like an awfully long time after that goal until the whistle blew.
Yeah, no, I get you. Any team at home that gets that goal, gets back to it, you're thinking, oh, hang on, the tide could turn here, you know.
Yeah, and it does so often before halftime, in that halftime before halftime injury bit, you know. Then look, second half, Palace had the first early chance. Pino played a clever pass to Mateta, who can only be described as dance with it between his legs for a while, as he has done in quite a few times. Then found a shot and it went just wide. That man just needs to score a goal from open play, and all of this. I don't know if you saw on Facebook, one of our regular commenters, thank you very much, they mentioned it. They said Brighton went through this period of time and they called it like something when you just can't score. Is it like the yips or something?
The yips is a famous sort of American term almost in some respects. But yeah, you call it the yips. In other words, you sportsmen that can't quite do the thing that they're supposed to do, whether it be, you know, hit a home run or score a touchdown. They get the yips.
Yeah, he said that we had a bit of a case of the yips, specifically Mateta. And I think that potentially he might be right. And I think the problem is the longer it goes on for, the worse it gets for a bit, doesn't it? You just got to get a bit of luck and then you get back on it. Down the other end, Iwobi hit the bar and Smith Rowe score from close range. Thankfully, VAR ruled it out for offside. And it was marginal, but it was offside. But there was also, did you see this? Because this is the other contentious talking point of the game. My good friend, the referee, who I wasn't particularly pleased with in this game, he went to VAR. He allowed the goal. He went to VAR. Then it was ruled offside. However, prior to that, he'd waved on an incident that happened, and no exaggeration, a good 1 meter away from him in full view and eye line. He waved on play on, which then ended up happening to be this goal, where the Fulham player actually goes to pick up the ball because he believes he's being fouled.
So
he handles the ball.
Does he though?
Yes.
Does he actually handle it? 100%
he handles it.
I'm not convinced he handled it.
I watched the replay of it on TV.
He goes to grab it because he thinks he's being fouled.
And the ball moves.
I'm not sure. And I think that's the issue. I think VAR didn't know.
100% the ball moves. I saw it on Sky Sports. VAR have got rewinds, pause, all the other. Like 100% that ball moved. So how are we in a world where VAR are letting a player pick up a ball potentially? Yeah, I mean, he didn't pick it up, but he moved that ball.
He went
with
to
his
grab
hands,
it, basically, didn't he?
Right.
Yeah.
And then the play is allowed to carry on. And the Palace players around him are going, what are you doing, my friend? You were a metre away. And this is kind of, I don't know quite what was going on there. I'm not saying he's biased. I'm just saying he's incompetent.
It's a strange one, because that came before the offside. So if you're doing VAR to check the goal, then you just look at it and go, okay, well, there's the foul. It's a handball. You know, you stop it there. But they went through the whole motion of looking for the offside.
I mean, the question would be, if the offside hadn't been offside, then they would look at in build-up, wouldn't they?
Yes, they would go back further.
Would they be allowed to do that if the ref had gone play on?
Yeah, because it's a foul within the build-up to the goal in that sense. But the offside, I mean, in some respects, you were lucky there as well, because you see how close the offside was.
Oh, mate.
It was like an inch.
It was, but also that's the game we're playing now.
Yeah,
right?
I know,
how many times have
it's
we
ridiculous.
Had that? I mean, it's one of them. But I think there was a bit of a redemption moment there, because I felt incredibly hard done, because I watched that in real time when he touched that, and then when they slowed it down on Sky Sports, he definitely touched that.
The interesting point of that, actually, I've just thought about this, right? And I don't know the answer to this. I'm just posing the question. If the referee looked at that and thought, that is a foul on Jimenez, but I'm playing on, in other words, I'm going, no, you play on, play advantage because you've got the ball. Does it matter that he handled it, in the sense that once he didn't handle it, literally pick it up, he just went to grab it and the ref said play on? I'm wondering whether, that's an interesting one. I wonder what would have happened if that had been onside.
Before the ref blew his whistle, so it's handball, isn't it?
I wonder.
Yeah, but anyway.
Look, it didn't matter. They didn't score. It was called offside. It's still 1-1.
And Fulham continued to attack. Palace held their shape and looked really quite organised, actually. And I liked it. We looked really dangerous on the break. There was lots of passes going like astray in midfield. But Fulham were doing the whole 11 people behind the ball thing. There was a little bit of mirroring going on, actually, in kind of defence and attack.
Yes.
It felt very much like there wasn't a particular way through. Very high pressing. And obviously, second half, we were you know, we're getting a little bit tired, but we carried it on. There was this Goldmouth scramble, which just wound me up. You probably heard me actually through the walls
getting
quite annoyed about this. Pino caused some problems for the Fulham defenders, and then Nketiah literally just couldn't get enough contact on that ball. We're talking inches away from the goal line here. But again, when you're watching it live, there were so many people in front of that ball, you couldn't actually see the ball.
It looked like a proper good old-fashioned FA Cup scramble. You know, mate, one of those like in the old sort of muddy six-yard area. It was like, it was amazing.
And it wasn't until you got the other camera angle from behind the goal, you could actually see how much calamity had actually gone on. It almost looked like a bit of a scrum or something. And then we had a double substitution. And this is good for me because this happened a good 15 minutes before we normally would have done it.
Andy, you had actual squad players come on the pitch.
Yeah, Uche and Lerma for Nketiah and Mateta. So it's quite a brave move there from him, bringing off kind of two attacking players.
Yeah.
So obviously one of them being replaced for kind of a bit more of a defensive midfielder player. Uche having a chance on goal within minutes of being on the pitch, just going wide actually. So he'd already, within them 2 minutes of being on the pitch, done more than he's done on any substitute appearance that he's had so far this season. Bless him, he normally comes on the 88th minute. So, what chance do you get? And another great ball in from Mitchell, this time Uche sliding in. And I likened this to, do you remember in Euro 96 where Gazza had that slide in and just missed it?
I mean, it wasn't quite the same level, like that. But I know what you mean.
It felt like that in my mind, which was, slide quicker!
That was the thing. It was the speed. He couldn't quite get to it. So then he had to sort of run at the angle to try and get to it. And then, it was unfortunate in that sense.
But actually, the difference being is that he did get contact on
it. He did.
And it was actually a very good save from the keeper. One that I didn't really kind of give the keeper credit for. I was more annoyed that he didn't go in.
I
realised that he'd actually made quite a good save. And then came the moment, a Palace corner, Gueye delivering an epic bullet header to make it 2-1.
Honestly, after my week and my day... 1-1, I was clinging on to the concept that, okay, it's a point, away at Fulham. Fulham have come from behind. Doesn't sound like they're going to get another goal, but I'll take a point. Like, in my head, I was thinking that, and then...
But if you'd have asked me at half-time, Neil, I would have said 1-1 probably would have been the right score.
I think
if you
probably
asked me at
full-time,
I think if we'd have drawn that game, I think we probably would have felt quite hard done by with the chances we had in that second half as well.
I suppose quality of chances, yes, I think you're absolutely right, you know, in that sense. I think when you look at it from just purely numbers perspective, I think you both had, Fulham had 12 shots, you had 11. You had 5 shots on target, they had 4. You know, it was relatively even, but you're right, the quality of the chances that you had, you could argue that definitely 3 points was fair.
And the quality of defending, apart from obviously sat and watched that moment of brilliance, and they applauded too. So there we go. And then all that was left to do was survive 6 minutes. I don't know where he found them 6 minutes from either. 6 minutes of added time, which... To be honest, we did with relative ease,
I was going to say, it wasn't really
normally
desperate, was it?
Normally, it's a bit... I mean, the Burnley extra time was worse than that. So, to conclude, Neil, 3 wins from 3 visits to Craven Cottage this year. We've won 5 of our 8 away derbies in the Premier League in 2025. This win marks the 8th time Palace have won a Premier League game this year with less than 40% possession.
Wow.
The most of any side, right?
Yeah.
Proving that possession stats are null and void these days.
I agree.
Since Oliver Glasner took charge in 2024, only Arsenal, Liverpool and Man City have won more Premier League away points than Palace.
That's a good stat.
Arsenal, Liverpool and Man City, right?
Yeah, that's a good
stat. That's mad. So we've lost only 9 away games in 33 games.
Yeah. Look, it pains me to say, but...
Where are we in the league?
Where are you in the league, in all seriousness? Are you 5th, 4th? What are you now?
Fourth, Neil.
Okay, right.
We're 4th, and it's not even a fake 4th like it has been in previous weeks.
No, it's definitely not a fake 4th.
Because everyone has actually played.
I agree.
So, yeah, 4th in the league, and I think, look, the higher we can get in early December... the better. Yeah. You know as well as I do, right? Because they're coming thick and fast.
Yeah.
So, yes, a good week for Palace. But as I said at the start of it, Neil, I wouldn't say it was highly convincing and overwhelmingly we should have won everything. I think we had the luck on our side, but also we were organised and I think we deserve to grind it out.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Listen, well done, in all seriousness. 6 points in a week is nothing to be sniffed at. So congratulations to Palace. It hurts,
you,
but to be fair, you deserved it. So well done.
Thank you, mate.
See you in a moment.
When your furnace or air conditioner quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of Care Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again, without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win the Lennox Partner of the Year Award and a BBB Torch Award for Ethics last year. So, call Care Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
Welcome back, Neil. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. I'm getting there.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying my best to be positive as much as I can, but I'm just about to start to talk about Brighton, so it might just disappear quite quickly.
It's just that, do you know what? You're up and down like a fiddler's elbow with your moods. You know, last week you were just so chirpy, and this week less so, Neil. Yeah. I can't work it out.
I know what it is, mate. It's the hope that kills you. That's what it is. It's the hope that some sort of game that when they play well, like the Forest game, and you go, oh, is this the corner that they're turning? You know what I mean? Like, is that the moment?
Yeah.
It wasn't.
But we have to understand that unless you're one of one or two teams in that league, you ain't going to win every game.
It's not about winning, mate. Yeah. We're going to go through this every fucking time, are we? It's not about winning. It's about the way that they play.
You didn't play very well, no?
Well, I tell you what, look, we've got two games to get through, so let me just get through them, right? So, same as you, midweek game, we had Aston Villa, though.
Okay? Was it a football match or was it a cricket score? What happened here, mate? Talk me through it.
Do you know what happened here? Villa are really good, you know.
Well, I mean, all you've got to do is look at the league on that one.
Do you know what? Villa are really good. And we caught them for the first 20 minutes, we caught them asleep. I have to be completely honest.
Okay.
So for the first 20 minutes of the game on Wednesday, we were pretty good. We were positive, and we were playing really well in the way that we were the style that we were playing. Villa were trying as well, but they just were not quite on it. You know what I mean? Like, you could just see it. They weren't quite gelling. We made three changes to the lineup that we for the previous game. So we played, obviously, Forest the weekend before, had a really good game, but they had to make some changes. The first one being injury related, which is annoying. So Ayari came out, Belaba came in. Belaba, to be fair, had his best game of the season against Aston Villa, which is stupid. I know, as we lost, but he actually, as an individual, he played really well. Good. Mainly because it's getting really close to AFCON. That's probably what it is. Gruder came in for Jorginho because, if you remember, he may have had some concussions, so they didn't want to take any risks. So he was out of the squad completely. Gruder came in that sort of number 10 role. And Welbeck was rested. He was put onto the bench. And Simas was brought in for his first Premier League start. So, I mean, it's understandable. You know, you've got to try and... You've got two fixtures in a week. I would think what their plan was always going to be was maybe play Simas for sort of, you know, 70 minutes, bring Welbeck on for the last 20 if we need him. And then obviously he's fresh for the game this weekend. I'm sure that was the plan. And I think one of the issues with this game, one of the downfalls, I'll get to in a minute, the two sort of major moments that I think caused the problems for Brighton. But I think one of them was to do with Simas and Welbeck, and I'll get to that. So, yeah, look, the game started slow. I think we were okay. We were positive, but Villa started really slow and we took advantage, basically, is the best way to say that. We got ahead through a corner where it's sort of right under the crossbar, a bit of a melee, and Van Hek put it on the back post. And we got a second on 29 minutes as well, thanks to a great flick from Gruder over the high line where Hinchwood, running into the box, went to try to cross it and got it deflected into the back of the net by Pau Torres. Now, Hinchwood hadn't been on the pitch very long. And this is one of the issues that I think we need to talk about. The significant moments in the match where I think, you know, there were real problems. And the first one being that on 26 minutes, Stefanos Simas went down injured. He turned in a weird way. His leg gave way. And it looks like the poor kid has done his ACL.
Oh, no.
Absolutely. So he is... We didn't know at the time. He walked off, but you could tell there was something from the replays. His knee gave way a little bit.
That's got to be going for him because he's only just got his starts.
That was his first start against Villa. The week before, obviously, against Forest, he got his first goal. Like, you know, he's literally just starting to come into the team. Yeah. And he's worked so hard to get to that position. and then looks like an ACL knee damage of some sort. The manager hasn't said how long, but he has indicated it will be a long time. It will be months.
ACL, that's potentially a season, isn't it?
You never know, do you? That's the problem, is the degree of it. But yes, it could be up to a year. You know, you just don't know. So we'll have to wait and see. Ooh. But that was one of the big key moments, I think, of the game as well, because playing Simas in a midweek game, we were trying to rest Welbeck. And the manager made a decision at that point when Simas went off not to bring on Welbeck, mainly probably because it was so early in the game. It was 26 minutes. And what he did, he's done this a little bit from time to time, was he put Gruder in that sort of number nine, brought Jack Hinshelwood in, and they sort of played a bit of a false nine where Gruder sort of came short and all that sort of stuff. But he's not a striker. He's not someone that's going to hold the ball up. He's also not lightning quick like Simas is, that chases down lost causes or anything. Mm. He's a very different style of a player. He's not a striker, you know. And I think that changed the way we played. And it, if you think about it, 26 minutes. Yes, we got our goal just after.
So we were 1-0 up
at that point.
Time. Right.
That happened, and within 2 minutes, we got lucky. We got a second goal by a deflection, and it was a little bit of a surprise to be two up against Villa, let's be honest, that early in the game. And so I think what happened at that point, though, that injury changed the way that we played.
Yeah.
And it just made it very different for Villa, that Villa suddenly didn't quite have that. They didn't have that threat in behind that Simas was at that point. And so they pushed up a little further. They started playing the game. And when they turned up, I mean, you know, it was a much more even game from that perspective. So Watkins, right, Ollie Watkins, he hasn't scored for quite a few games.
Mm.
Obviously, Brighton love to help a player out as much as they can. So we decided not to tackle him or any of the Aston Villa players around the 37th minute for Villa to score 2-1. And suddenly you're thinking, oh, this is a bit nervy.
I celebrated that goal hard. I'm not going to lie to you. When that went in, because I obviously, you know, like when you're watching two games that are on at the same time and then it flashes up on the screen. And I think I celebrated that more than the Palace goal, actually, because I was like, maybe this podcast might not be so straightforward.
No, I understand. I mean, at 2-0 up, I was a bit surprised that we were 2-0 up, but I was loving it. And then 2-1, you're thinking, okay, look, do you know what? 2-1, I still take that at halftime. Let's just play it sensibly. Let's get in at halftime, 2-1 up, and then let's see where we get to in the second half.
Mm.
In your mind, you're thinking to yourself, Villa haven't been great. They're not going to be this bad again in the second half.
No,
do you know
way.
What I mean? Like, so you're thinking to yourself, if we can get in 2-1, you never know what might happen, right? And this is where the second moment of the game that I think turned the tide. So one was the Simas injury. The second one was just before half time. Now, Villa had a corner, right? And it was a really weird, frustrating few minutes, right? So Villa had a corner. Ball comes in. There's a bit of a mess in the box. There's shouts for handball. There's a save. Did it go over the line? There's all these sorts of things going on. Whilst this is happening, no one's blown a whistle. The ref obviously is playing on because he doesn't know. He's waiting for VAR to let him know if something's happened. We break. We counter-attack at this point, right? And we go up the other end. Gruder, mainly. Minte's trying to join him. And we have a two-on-two situation, right? Gruder makes the wrong decision and goes to take a shot. It just hits the defender, basically. Now, the important part here is that when this corner started, when this whole piece of action started, right, we were in injury time. Now, the ref had said, or the linesman had said, 6 minutes added time. Okay, that's how long supposedly there was left in that half. When they had the corner, there was about a minute left. So at that point, when the ball comes in, it's finished, right? We break up at the other end and we're like, oh, okay, we'll have this if the ref's saying play on. We thought he's going to blow the whistle. He doesn't. We take the shot, stupid shot, wasted. The ref still doesn't blow his whistle, right? And this is like probably about 7.5 minutes now of 6 minutes. The ball comes back into the midfield. Now, this is where it goes wrong. I'm not going to blame the ref. I'm going to blame our players, because half of that team out there switched off.
Mm.
They just stopped. They thought the ref was going to blow the whistle. They thought Gruder taking the shot was like, oh, that's it. Ref's going to blow. They didn't blow the whistle. Morgan Rogers hit a ball over the top. Ollie Watkins is right on the end of it, does what he does. 2-2. So we end the half being 2-0 up against Villa and finishing it 2-2. And that is where the game was lost. That
moment. Well, yeah, because, I mean, mentally, your players just cannot believe what's happened. They've gone into that dressing room.
Well, it's twofold. They can't believe it. They can't believe it's happened, but at the same time, they know it's their fault.
Yeah.
Right? They're demonstrating at the referee and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, play to the bloody whistle.
I mean, mate, it's what we teach my son's football team.
Yeah. 6-year-olds have to play to the whistle. Like, it's not difficult. It's something you should know what to do. And there's people around me that are going, oh, blowing at the ref and having a go at him. I'm like, what about the players? Mm. They're the ones that did just switched off completely. So look, I'm angry at that point because of our players. I'm sure they're upset and they're angry. But you're quite right about the attitude and the mentality of them, because they were shocked, right?
Yeah.
And they were down and they went in. When they came out, they still looked the same. They still look shell-shocked,
aren't they? Because there's the embarrassment of it as well, isn't there? There's like, what's just happened here? And a team like Villa, on the form that they're in at the moment, as I said, just look at the league. I'd be honest, I would, and this is not me being, you know, that idiot that sits opposite you every weekend or whatever and kind of puts the dig in and puts the boot in. I genuinely didn't see this game going any other way than it did. I'm not saying I guessed the score at halftime, but I really didn't see you getting anything out of this after losing that 2-0 lead.
Do you know what, mate? I have to agree with you. It got to 2-2. They came back out, and within 5 minutes, you're looking at them going, this is not going to go well. Do you know what I mean? You could see it. And Albion were trying to stay with them, but they looked completely shell-shocked, as I said. Villa had 10 shots on target in this match, right? Against Brighton at the Amex, 10 shots on target. I haven't looked, but that must be a record. We don't usually let go of that many, right? They were fantastic. They really were. Ultimately, of course, we lost 4-3, right? They scored 2 more goals. They came back from being 2-0 down to score 4 goals. We got a last minute sort of like, what would you call it these days?
Token gesture.
Token consolation.
Consolation.
Van Hecker with a great shot from outside the box. He scored two goals in a game. Yeah, it was great. But ultimately, those two moments of Simas going off, us changing the way we play, us switching off just before half time to get it back to 2-2 for Villa, those were the moments that really sealed it for me. And I think it was a frustration, but at the same time, you know, after the fact, once you've cooled down, you look at it and you go, Villa were fantastic.
Well, yeah.
And at the beginning of the game, I was worried. I was thinking we weren't going to get much out of it anyway. It's just because we were 2-0 up that it makes you feel, you know, you get that bitter taste in the mouth.
And at home as well, mate.
Also,
can I just ask you in between your two reviews here, what is going on at the Amex? Why is there so many empty seats, Neil? I've seen it all over the press again in the socials this week. And you look at any of the stills of the game and like the shots of the game that I saw on video and stuff, there's empty seats all over the place, mate. Like, surely the team cannot be reassured by the fact that no one's even bothering to go and see them.
I obviously can't answer why there are empty seats. I don't know why people aren't showing up. Sunday was horrific weather. It was on TV. That might have something to do with it, the West Ham game. The Villa game, yeah, I don't know. What, from a personal perspective, what I can say is I struggle to watch Brighton sometimes at the moment because of all the things I've spoken about. There's a lack of identity, and I think you need an identity with a club, with a team. You need to be able to feel like you understand what we're trying to do, and I think that's a little bit of a problem at the moment. I really do.
It's just mad, isn't it? And it's like it's just something I just can't quite understand, Neil. A team in the country that is technically one of the best 10 teams in the country, you know, on average or whatever,
right?
And you haven't got what I would class as the biggest stadium out there, but it's a decent size.
Yeah.
But it's not too big for your club, right? So it's just mad. I don't know. Often see it since COVID times now.
When you hear the attendance numbers, I don't think we're not selling out the tickets. I think it's people aren't turning up. So the attendance numbers,
that's even worse.
Exactly, the attendance numbers like 31, 32, which is what our capacity is, right? So that means they've bought a ticket or they're season ticket holders.
Is that what it is, Neil?
Yeah.
Is it? Is it, it's not, they don't count the turnstile clicks.
They count how many tickets have been sold.
Yeah.
So that means, same, Emirates do that as well and other people. So when you see the holds, you also see, what you do see is a lot of people leaving early. That happens a lot. And I struggle with that one myself. I don't understand. It winds me up. And there are travel issues. I get that. Weeknights, fair enough. Maybe they've got kids with them. I understand it to a degree. But the bottom line is you've paid money to come and watch a football match and to support your team, theoretically. Then come and support your team. Watch the whole game. And deal with the other issues afterwards, because the whole point of you coming is to watch the game and support your team.
Well, you know, without a railroad in your review, Brighton should be doing something about this. And I know it's a bit of a rogue comment to make here.
What do you mean, should be doing? What can they do?
Well, Brighton have been pioneering the whole ticket resale thing and, you know, stamping it out and all the other bits and pieces. How about the club looks at how to get the person who's bought that ticket to come to the game?
They have.
Because that's what concerns me. If you're telling me that all them empty seats in
that
stadium are people that just didn't bother turning up.
I'm not saying that. I don't know, do I? I'm just making the point.
Two or three strikes.
They do. They do, Andy. Yes, that's
really?
I'd better say. They brought it in this season.
Wow.
So it'll be interesting to see by the end of the season what happens, because I think as a season ticket holder, I think I'm allowed something like 3 or 4 no-shows. That's it.
Wow.
So throughout this, which is fair enough, because the ticket can be resold, it can be given to someone else if there's somebody else wants it.
Well, you're
so
losing,
I don't know,
home advantage. That's that's my only point, which
I
is
agree.
That if your home form has been good, now it's starting to. That I mean, obviously, to lose 4-3 at home,
but at the same time, I can understand why people aren't coming when they see performances like we've been seeing. It's all well and good us saying we've got 3 points. It's not about the winning, Andy. I keep saying it. When you watch Brighton 90 minutes all the time, it's a struggle sometimes. It really is. And it's a struggle because we haven't got an identity. However much Herzler wants to go on about it, we haven't. Look, I'm going to digress, but I take your point about the attendances. It is a strange situation.
It's strange. That's the only reason I brought it up. Just very strange.
Yeah, look, the game ended with, I think we had 1.7 XG against Villa's 2.76 XG.
2.76.
Yeah, away at the Amex. I mean, just honestly, they were fantastic. They really were. The other interesting point about that XG number, so Albion's 1.7, our open play XG was only 0.5. So most of the time we were dangerous because we were on set pieces or something like that. That's all. So we just didn't really lay a glove on them, which sounds ridiculous. But after about 25 minutes, i.e. when Simas went off, nothing really happened from that moment on.
I'll be honest with you, Neil. I wouldn't beat yourself up over this one.
I wasn't. I was relatively positive.
If you'd played against a bad side, then, you know, I'd be laughing at you. But actually, I mean, Villa are, and we'll continue to be up there, I believe.
Well, in that case, Andy, in that case,
this
mate.
This next one.
Get yourself ready to have a laugh, because Brighton played West Ham on Sunday, as we know.
Just remind me, Neil, is this the West Ham that are my relegation favourites?
Yes, they are. That's the ones, mate.
Fighting for their lives?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Well, we got more points out of West Ham than we did against Villa. It was a bad performance. That's the first thing to say straight away. So lineups-wise, Jorginho Rutter came back in. Welbeck came back in. Obviously, Simas is now injured. Belaba continued in midfield after his good performance at Villa, so that was good. It was nice to see. But, I mean, it was Groundhog Day. It was like the old-fashioned days of the Amex last season and the season before that and the season before that. The game settled into a really common pattern, and a pattern that everybody knew what was going to happen, because it's Nuno. We know what Nuno does. We understand what he does. He plays a 5 at the back. He plays 2 nice wing backs. They play a counter-attacking style where they don't move out of their shape unless they absolutely know they can attack. Otherwise, they don't move. And, you know, Albion passed the ball from side to side and then side to side. And then side to side. That was basically the game. And it was just a poor performance from beginning to end. Slow passing.
Actually,
you were.
I was listening to it on the radio whilst doing some decorating my downstairs toilet, Neil.
Oh, lovely.
Next time you come around my house, you can have a wee and you can appreciate it.
I might do more than that.
No number twos downstairs, mate. There's rules in our house. I was listening to it on the radio, and like, I'll be honest with you, I was chuckling away to myself because you were getting slated in the first half. I think it was TalkSport I was listening to it on, and it was. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine as a Brighton fan, it was painful to listen to. I'm assuming it was as painful to watch.
It was painful. And I think, obviously, there's an onus on Brighton to do something in that game. Yeah. West Ham knew exactly what they were doing. They were never aiming to be good, if you know what I mean. Like, they were not wanting to be expansive. They were doing their job, which was make sure they can come away with ideally a clean sheet or at least a point, something away from that game. And they did exactly what they needed to do, right? So they almost got all three, let's be honest. So we had really slow passing, nowhere near our normal level of intensity either. And again, sometimes the decisions that they were making were really strange in the passing. And look, one stat that jumped out at me, right? Albion made almost three times the number of backward passes than West Ham. So in other words, every time we got the ball, right, our forward or backward passes, right? So we were passing the ball backwards three times more times than West Ham did in the whole game.
But that's surely because they just put all their men behind the ball and there was nowhere to go, right?
Well, the point is Brighton only wanted to pass it sideways or backwards.
Yeah.
The amount of forward passes we had was almost non-existent.
Is this Brighton playing against the low block again and not quite knowing what to do?
There you go. And how we still don't know what to do is a struggle. Now, look, there are some reasons, I think, why we struggled, and I'll get onto that in a second, and maybe out of our control a little bit. But we refused to break quickly is one of the biggest problems, I think. West Ham had 14 shots. So there were opportunities to counterattack their counterattack, if you know what I mean. There were opportunities where they were up in near our box. They had 14 shots. There were at least 10, 12, 13 opportunities where West Ham were attacking.
Well, that's the only time to get them.
Exactly.
You're absolutely right.
Like there were opportunities. Out of 586 passes, Brighton only made 26 long balls. Okay. 586 passes, only 26 of them were classed as long balls, where we made a choice to try and get over the top or break. Or not good enough. It's really not good enough. And everyone knows what Nuno is going to do, how they're going to set up. Yet, you know, not... So if you think about the Forest game, right, there were a few tweaks. There was a couple of clever tactics, a special plan, right, to break through and get through the low block and the way that Forest play. And for this game, it was almost as like, did you not remember that Nuno used to manage Forest? Do you not remember his whole portfolio of work? We know what they're going to do. So what's the plan here? How are we going to do it, right? I can't question the players' work ethic, right? I'm not having a go at them in that sense. They were trying, okay? They run themselves ragged and they worked really hard for each other, okay? So that's the first thing. I'm not having a go at them in that sense. But what I am saying is, to beat a low block, you need the ability to dribble past defenders. You need the ability to beat the man that is defending you so that the next player has to make a move and moves out of their block. That's
someone's
the whole
point. Got to do something special.
Exactly. It's no surprise, all right? Now, our four shots that we got on target in the whole game didn't happen. Our first shot on target didn't happen until the 88th minute, Andy.
That is a stat that you don't want repeated.
Four shots on target in the last 7 minutes of the game. So the last 2 minutes of normal time, 5-6 minutes of injury time. That's when we started getting our shots on target.
But you do like a late charge. You have been known to do a late
Andy,
charge.
Andy, come on, right? It's no surprise that that's when we got our shots on target. We had Gruder on the pitch, Jorginho, Kostoulas, all three of them really, really good dribblers. Okay, people that were willing to hold the ball, take on the player that was in front of them to create space and then pass it on. The other issue that, this is what I was going to get to, right? The other issue is that someone like Mitoma would have been perfect for this game, right? Someone like João Pedro would have been great for this game, where they are someone that's confident to just get past a player and move the defence around. And we don't have that at the moment. And that's the big difference, right? So yet again, we're conceding a goal and we leave it late to try and get back. Okay, so the goal that we concede, everyone's seen what's happened. It's just a mistake from Van Hek, bottom line, right? These things happen, and that was always going to be on the cards when we're pushing everybody up. He made a silly mistake. He tried to head it back to Dunk, underplayed it, and they got hold of it. And you know, I can pull that goal apart and I can say, oh, he should have done that, he's done that. But those things were always going to happen because we're leaving it so late, having not scored, that we're starting to get desperate. And that's the ultimate issue, isn't it? And that's why it feels like Groundhog Day, because when we come up against a low block and we start so slowly, and I think, to be fair, Fabian Hörsler is the one that's then pulling that out and going, yeah, we didn't have our normal intensity and things like that. It's like, well, the whole point of playing against a low block is absolutely go at them for the first 15, 20 minutes, try and get a goal. Because as soon as you get a goal, they then have to change their game plan at some point because they're the ones behind. And we didn't feel like we did that. It was a very slow first half performance, and that's what really created the problem for us long term. I want to make a couple of little points, right, before I just stop talking, because it's just winding me up, right? What I would say is we did save a point. We did carry on doing the things we should be doing. And finally, nearer the end of the game, it started to work a little bit. And as I said, that's mainly because I think we had Gruda and Kostoulas, who looked really good when he finally came on. He's really good at just taking on a player and moving the ball. So we did save a point out of a poor performance, which long term, hopefully that'll help us. And also, I just want to make a special mention to Bart Verbruggen.
Yeah.
He pulled off one of the best double saves I've ever seen in the flesh in that second half.
Really?
It was a fantastic... He got a save from, I think it was from Bowen, that deflected off Kadioglu. He got his hand down to it. Somerville then tries to head it over him and he makes a last-ditch attempt to save it and he pushes it over the bar. It's one of the best things I've seen a goalkeeper do at the Amex. He is steadily putting together a really impressive season, which may mean he disappears.
He's kept you in it so many times.
I totally agree with you. And he's the one bright spark at the moment with Minté, maybe. Minté is starting to look tired, by the way, and I can understand it. He's playing every minute and he's the one that everyone looks to because he's the one that has to try and make a bright spark and make a decision somewhere here or there, but he's starting to look a little bit tired as well.
Well, I mean, if you're starting to look tired in a team that's not playing in Europe or not in any of the cups anymore, you're in trouble, mate.
I agree. I mean, look, let me give you some stats, right? Albion had 68% of the possession, XG of 1.7, and most of that 1.7 was in the last 10 minutes of the game.
And most of the 68% possession was passing it sideways in midfield.
Exactly. But
Yeah.
We had 44 touches in the box, but only one goal. So that's even more of an indication as to how much of a low block they had, right? We were getting to the edge of the box, we were touching it in and out, couldn't get around them. We were trying to score the ultimate goal rather than actually, let's just try booting it in the back of the net. Let's try from long range. Let's try chucking it in the mixer, as Sean Dyche would say.
Do you know what it sounds to me like, Neil?
What?
It sounds to me like Nuno had a good day out. Sounds to me like he planned this well and executed it well.
He did.
And he knew what he was doing.
But he does know what he's doing. And I agree. He's got a plan. He knows what he's doing. But to be fair, mate, we all knew what he was going to do. That's what's frustrating when you watch it and you go, surely you know what's going to happen. This brings me on to my last point, actually.
Go on.
Which is a little bit out of Fabian Hörsler's control, you could argue. And that is that I think we are missing certain play styles in our squad at the moment, in the way that we play. We have got injuries to six of our first team midfielders or attackers, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got Matoma, who supposedly is fit, but we haven't seen him, so he's still not fit. We don't know where he is. He must be on the grass doing something, because 2 weeks ago he was returning and he still hasn't played. Tommy Watson, I haven't got a clue where he is. He's not in the squad still. Solly March, obviously long-term injury, but sounds like he's on his way back, but again, hasn't played this season. Yassin Ayari, who's one of our better midfielders for getting from box to box, missing the last two games, and that's made a big difference, I think, as well. And now, obviously, we've got Simas, plus we've got Milner on an injury basis, who's, you know, a good player to have around from an attitude and perspective. And then we've got Belaber off to AFCON next week, right? So there are some really big problems if we don't get these players fit.
And you've got squad depth issues now.
Well, we've got squad depth in a particular place, and that's the issue.
No,
it's fine,
it's
mate.
You've got all the players in the world, but you still haven't got enough.
It's the injuries is the issue.
Yeah.
Now, subsequent to me writing some of these notes down, right, this evening...
Oh, breaking news, breaking news.
So this evening, there was some information, and it wasn't confirmed by the club, but it's been confirmed by Andy Naylor, who is the Athletics correspondent for Brighton, that Florian Fab, who is the chief medical officer, so he's basically the big physio guy, the boss man, right, that came in only 18 months ago, yeah, the head of medical that only came in 18 months ago, there's been a decision made by Jason Ato, our new sporting director, and technical director Mike Cave, for him to leave immediately, right? So there is a decision somewhere that something isn't working right, and these injuries do play into it, because since the beginning of last season, we have had so many injuries to our players.
So many.
Something has to be up, and I don't know what it is, but maybe they looked at it and gone, do you know what? We need to refresh this completely. Let's start again and come up with another plan. So that is something that is playing into this narrative, that our players are looking, one, tired, two, half the ones that we really need, our technical players, are injured a lot of the time. And it's frustrating to watch. And the very last thing I will say on this, Andy, before we take another little break, right, is that, and it's a sad thing to say, but do you know what? I think I have to change my expectation for this season. I just don't think we're ready to challenge for the top six. Yeah, I do. I think I was all bullshy at the beginning of the season and really happy and going, you know what, we're going to do well, we're going to do this. Having watched the first chunk of this season, first third of this season now we're through, right? I think we'll be lucky if we scrape seventh. That's what I think. I think we are so inconsistent. We've got so many different niggly injuries. And also, I still don't see an identity. Every so often, there's little bits that I look at and go, oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. But I don't see it enough. So at the moment, I'm going to change my expectation. And if we get seventh, I'll be ecstatic. At this rate, I think we'll be very much Crystal Palace.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah!
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Right, so what are we going to talk about next?
Neil,
I've
got a suggestion.
Oh, hello?
Well, Palace have got this bit of silverware in their cabinet, right?
We're
going to have to give back soon. And tonight, tonight there was a draw, right?
Oh, third round FA Cup draw, yeah.
Which has only just happened, actually.
Yeah.
And I feel like we should have a little chat about that very quickly because Palace have been drawn away. A tricky tie this, actually.
Shut up.
It's a tricky one.
Shut your face.
We've been drawn with Macclesfield. And I think quite an easy one for you, right?
Sorry, I go. Whoa. Before we move on, so you've been drawn against Macclesfield in the sixth tier, National League North.
It's no way game, mate.
Hang on. They're like lower than mid table in the National League North.
Yeah, but don't underestimate the fact that that'll probably be played in a week where we've already got three games.
Or at the same time.
Yeah.
Exactly
like,
at the same time.
Like, do you know, like in the theatre, having a matinee? They'll probably look, guys, listen, you've already got four in this week. Can you do it Wednesday at midday? All right, yeah, no worries.
It's a double game day.
Yeah. Who have you got?
Well, do you know what? Honestly, I was watching the draw and I was thinking to myself, this is the one bright moment in my week, right? We've had two rubbish games and this will be a lovely little oasis of calm where we can draw a nice, like, you know, Conference League side or League Two. That would be nice. A little trip down somewhere like, you know, along the coast or somewhere like that. But no. So we get drawn away to Manchester United.
Which, funny enough, if that had happened in the last year, you kind of go, you never know. Like, because it's not the fortress it used to be, right? I mean, even the roof's leaking these days. However, yeah, potentially.
Well, it's just the point, isn't it? It's the fact that it's the third round of the FA Cup and you want an easy tie like we all do. We all want it, like you got. Like, we all want that because that's the opportunity. You get a free hit against a lower league side where you can put in some players that maybe haven't played, not that we've got any available, but just that concept. And then we get Man United away at Old Trafford where we lost, what, 4-2? Did we lose 4-3 last week? Last time, but
you never know, they might not power a strong team. I mean, also, look,
they've got Europe to, but oh no, that's no, right.
You never know. I mean, look, we didn't get too much of a free run at it last time when we won it. I wouldn't say we got the easiest of routes through,
no.
But do you know what? The one thing that I would say is that if we have to hand it back to anybody, which obviously the odds are saying that we, you know, there's more chance of us handing it back than winning it, right? Yeah. If we have to hand it back to anybody, we cannot hand it to you. So,
honestly, mate, I really don't think you're going to have to worry about it.
Well, you just never know, do you?
I do.
You just never know.
No, I do. I do. I honestly do. The way we're playing, the way our season is going so far, there is no chance us beating Man United. Good luck with Macclesfield, though, the mighty Macclesfield.
Can you imagine, though? Right. I mean, it's really hard to explain this, but I'm sure the Palace fans listening can kind of relate to this. The fact that that draw happened tonight and it's begun again made me feel a bit sick.
Why?
Because we're going to have to give it back. Oh. As in, like, there's that moment, but there's the moment of, like, oh, we've won that thing we've been waiting for so, so long. And then you, like, the fact that now we're going to have to get, and obviously winning it, you can never take that away. But for us to be the holders of the FA Cup is just so lovely. I don't want it to end. And also, I don't know, there's part of me that's like, if we're going to go out, I want to go out to Man City. I want to go out to Arsenal. I don't want to go out to Macclesfield because that would be the funny story to go. It's a bit like getting into the Europa League and end up in the Conference League and losing to Larnaca.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine if this is the end of the FA Cup story?
I get
losing
it.
I get it.
It'd
be funny though, wouldn't it?
It would be
but
funny.
It's not going to happen.
I don't see it happening. The nice thing for you though as well, like, and I mean this genuinely, right? You get to wear a nice little special badge as well, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get the little FA Cup like badge, but then with a little number one on it to say that you've won it. Do you know what I mean? Like, little things like that. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing that you won it. I feel sick, but at the same time, it's nice that a team that isn't one of the big ones, you know, won the FA Cup. It really is. It's like when Leicester won it. Like, it's great to see. It just feels like there, at the moment, the way Brighton are playing, it feels like there is actually more chance of Palace retaining this than Brighton getting a chance. So,
well, I mean, the odds would say probably officially that there is, given that draw.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway, listen, we're still in the other cup. I think we've got to worry about that one more.
Well, look, speaking of cups and leagues and conferences and all those sorts of things, I think we probably should talk about the fixtures for this week because one of them is the Conference League for you, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got our opportunity to right our wrongs and try and put this one back on track because it's not too late. It's not too late.
Well,
as I said, I think we are in danger of us deleting the easy route. If that makes sense. Might have to take the scenic route if we're going to go any further in this.
Well, yeah, but then at the same time, you know, this is the point where... How many games left you got?
Two, I think.
Two more
we've
games.
Got two, one away and one at home.
Okay.
And this game against Shelbourne on Thursday is, I would say, the point of no return in terms of...
Oh, absolutely.
Got, like,
yeah.
This has got to happen now.
But it's Shelbourne. I mean,
mate,
come
what
on.
Are you talking about? Reigning Irish champions, won it 13 times in Ireland, qualify for the Champions League, Neil, but drop down to
trap.
Europa and then the Conference League. In 2025, Neil, they qualify for the group stage of the Conference League. They are a physical, gritty football team.
Yeah.
Dublin.
All right. Let me just reiterate. Shelbourne from Ireland.
They've all, mate, that's all facts that I just said there.
All right. I'll give you another fact.
Giants.
Shall I give you another fact?
Go on.
They're 34th in the Conference League. They've gained currently 1 point.
Yeah. They're in the conference. Are you in the Conference League, Neil?
But we don't play in the Irish League. If we did, we'd be in the UEFA Cup, probably.
Wow. Well, no, look, jokes aside, this should be a comfortable win for us.
Of course it should.
So should have Larnaca. So do you know what I mean? This is the thing. You just don't know. But look, it's exciting. I think it's not quite what the Palace fans had in mind when it was European away days.
No, fair point.
A trip to Dublin. But also Dublin, you know, I'm sure that'd be nice. Also, the other point being is that I think the maybe the five away fans that have actually got a ticket for this in their little shed and, you know, on their stadium, not many tickets that have been made available for the away fans. So
really?
I'm hoping that they'll be able to make enough noise.
I reckon there'll be quite a few Palace fans there just by hook or by crook, let's be honest.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Like, it'll
but
be...
it's a very small stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
So no, what do you predict? Come on.
Do you know what? I'm going all out 3-0.
Yeah.
3-0, convincing win, back on track, in the verge of top eight, ready for that last game.
If there's ever a game where on paper, before all this started, Glasner was looking at it and going, I can rest some players, it would have been this one. But now, because of the position that you're in,
he won't rest anyone.
No, he can't, can he? So he's got to get it done first and then maybe take players off. But
I reckon you go 2-0 up, then maybe he'll start making some substitutions. And I don't know, part of me does think maybe we might see SA in this game. Because he was about to bring him on at the weekend and then changed his mind.
It would make sense. I mean, he's, like you say, he's been on the bench now. He's there in there or thereabouts, so I would expect him to play too.
Yeah. Who have you got?
What, in Europe?
No, well, I've done that joke already. Only once per podcast I could do that joke.
On the weekend, we go to Anfield.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly, mate. Exactly. I'm not going to sit here and do predictions anymore. I've said that already because I just haven't got a clue how to predict Albion, let alone try and predict Liverpool at the moment.
This is a really weird one, isn't
okay,
it?
Okay, look, let me run through some facts.
Oh, go
and
on.
Then listeners can make their own minds up as to what they think's going to happen, right? So, we go to Anfield on the weekend, right? It's a Saturday game.
Yep.
We have been to Anfield the last two occasions and lost 2-1. So they've been close games, okay?
Different Liverpool.
And I agree. We've played well against Liverpool because Liverpool have a go at us, right? So it's always an open game. So there's always opportunities in that sense. But let's be honest, Liverpool have always been better, right? We haven't won at Anfield since February 2021, which was the lockdown games that happened over that time.
Okay.
And I think we won 1-0. And with Liverpool, the way they're playing at the moment, who knows what's going to happen. Mm. On paper, of course, Liverpool are going to win, but I don't know. Having just watched the West Ham game, Albion-West Ham, we are definitely not going to win playing like that. So the one thing I can tell you is it will be unpredictable. And that's all I can say.
Yeah, the only way, mate.
The only thing that I'm looking at that I'm thinking, okay, there's an opportunity there for them not to be as fresh as us is because they have Champions League this week.
They've got Milan, haven't they?
No. Yeah, they've got Milan away. So they've got to go to Milan. So in my head, I'm thinking, okay, well, there's a chance there that they'll be a bit tired or other things on their mind. But just the way things are going on at Liverpool at the moment, who knows what state they'll be in come next weekend. Brighton are even more unpredictable than Liverpool at the moment. So who knows, mate? Who knows? What about you?
I hope that you don't beat them. One, because I don't like Brighton winning. And secondly, because there's a lot of rumours going around that Glasner's the next Liverpool manager.
Do you?
Let's prolong that for as long as we can.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It'd be great if Glasner does leave, but I don't get how those styles mesh together, because he'd have the same issue in some respects that Nuno had at Forest, which is the fans want exciting football and attacking football. And Glasner, yes, I appreciate they score goals and stuff, but ultimately there are counter-attacking tactics that he has. I just don't see those two meshing, the manager and the styles. So
all I would see meshing there is a transfer budget such as Liverpool's and a coach such as Glasner can't particularly get it wrong. But yeah, anyway,
fair point.
I don't want that to happen. Oh, mate, we've got an easy game.
Oh, good. Who have you got?
Team that we beat last summer at Wembley.
Great. So you got Man City. Where's that, though?
It's at home.
At home. Yeah. Okay, brilliant. So that's... that's going to be so annoying. That's going to be so annoying.
Right, Neil, close your eyes.
Oh, God.
Stick with me. Close your eyes, Neil.
Yeah.
Close your eyes. And imagine, just imagine this. Crystal Palace beat Man City at home.
I feel sick.
what would that do to the league table?
I feel sick.
I mean, it would be an interesting situation going into Christmas with Palace on the heels of Arsenal and Man City in firmly in the Champions League position.
Oh, God.
And then we wake up. No, I mean, what a crazy world we're living in, where we have got Man City business at home and there's not much between us in the league. And granted, it is extremely close.
Oh, my God.
It's so close. But yes, I think, look, there's a psychological thing here where we know we can beat them.
If
right?
you beat them, I'm not turning up next week.
Mate, if we beat them, I'll do a podcast on my own.
I'm not even joking, mate. I don't think I can handle another week where we lose to Liverpool and then you win against Man City.
Here's something.
This could be the end of Seagull Eagle. This
it really is something to make you feel better.
Go on.
We are still yet to win a game after a European game.
Oh, yes, you are.
So, although we did break the back of the whole midweek thing a little bit, because we played a midweek game and then we won. No,
totally different.
You're right. It is totally different. But I think
there's a bit of psychology there,
which is that we played two games in a week and we won. You know, we won them both.
And also, this time you're not really going to Europe. Like, I know it sounds ridiculous. You're going to Ireland.
Yeah,
like,
we are.
It feels different. It won't feel like you'll be in the air for 5 minutes and then come down.
Do you reckon that they won't take the plane? Maybe, and that they'll get a ferry or something just to make it feel like they've not.
I mean, you joke, but those sorts of like psychiatric sort of like little mind games, that could work.
Yeah. I mean, I would do it. I'd be like, get on the Brittany ferries. No, that'd go France, didn't they?
Get on them.
Don't do that. anyway, look, I'm optimistic, but then I looked at the last results, Neil, and I think there's a stat going around something about the fact that they scored at least 3 goals in 5 of their last 6 games.
They're
scoring freely at the moment.
They've found a way now. They've settled into their style, their new style that they're playing, and they are looking dangerous, to be fair, Man City. They really are.
They're scoring goals, but they're also letting them in.
They are.
And this is the thing where I'm thinking to myself, this could be an interesting one because we don't like letting a lot of goals in. So I think there could be... I mean, look, last time I said there was going to be goals in the game was the Brighton game and I got publicly ridiculed for it. So I'm not going to say how many, but I do think there's going to be goals in this game. And I think if we keep our discipline at the back, grab a moment of magic, we could nick something here.
Okay.
But let's see. But I'll tell you something now. I'll take a win. This is a ridiculous situation. Take a win at Shelbourne over a win at Man City.
I see what you mean. Yeah, no, I get it.
Even though the Shelbourne one should be a given.
No, I get it.
So, yeah, let's see what happens. So that's the fixtures. I've got one more thing that I need to talk to you about.
Oh, yeah, go on.
So much so that I sat forward then nearer to the microphone because it's that important.
What's this?
There is speculation, and I quote speculation, Neil. These are not my personal thoughts or opinions. That your owner might have been a naughty boy.
Oh, this thing. Yeah. It's been a strange situation happening over the last week.
Well, I just want to get your take on it, mate, because there is... Do you know what? There was speculation on this story about... obviously, your man's made a lot of money in gambling, right? And there's speculation that it might have been a bit closer to home than everyone might have thought in terms of what he was gambling on.
Yes.
And who these people might have been that were gambling on his behalf or whatever it would be. I don't know the full story, so I can't make any statements on that. But then the bit that I wanted to ask you about is because I kind of rubbished that because I was like, there's no way that a man in his position would be that stupid to do that. But then Bloomy might have kind of given it a bit of credibility by banning the reporter from The Guardian and banning The Guardian altogether from the stadium, which, funny enough, doesn't really make too much of a dent in an already empty press box and stadium anyway. So just kind of add into your problems. But what's going on, Neil? Tell me all about it.
I don't know what to say, Andy. It's
he's your hero. Come on, is it not? Do you not like?
I don't. At this precise moment in time, there is some reports, and reports are just that. They're in newspapers, right? About some legal cases that are currently going on that I can't talk about. You can't talk about, right? There's just things going on, and there is a suggestion, you're quite right, that Tony Bloom is part of these like betting syndicates and things like that are the suggestion. And that possibly there is a suggestion, as you said, that maybe he is part of a syndicate that is betting on things that he's not allowed to bet on. And those being the competitions that Brighton and Hove Albion are in, and obviously games that Brighton and Hove Albion are playing in. So those are things he's not allowed to gamble in. Now, Tony Bloom has made his money from gambling. Mm. That's how he made his money. That's how the data stuff and all that sort of thing came about. He has special discompensation from the FA to gamble as an owner.
Oh, I didn't know this.
And he has that because that's his living. That's how he made his money, right?
Yeah, but I bet you it don't let him do it on his own
exactly,
games.
Absolutely.
Or the
absolutely.
Premier League, probably.
Now, he did put out a statement. I won't read all of it, but I think I'll just read the last little bit that might help just identify
Let's clarify things,
right? So he's put... following an inaccurate and misleading report in The Guardian earlier this evening, I can categorically assure our supporters that I have not placed bets on any Brighton and Hove Albion matches since becoming the owner of the club in 2009. In addition, in 2014, new rules on betting, the FA introduced a policy with quite onerous provisions for owners of football clubs with interests in betting. These provisions allow, in particular, the policy... Right, so this is what you're saying now. This policy that is in place prevents me from betting on any match or competition that Brighton Hove Albion is involved in. I have always fully complied with these conditions, and all of my bets on football are audited by one of the world's leading accounting firms on an annual basis to ensure full compliance to the FA's policy. He goes on and on and on. He's basically,
and I bet they are, Neil. I bet all of his bets are.
Yes, yeah. So he's making the point. Well, yeah, he's making the point that I'm following everything, I'm doing everything, and I'm going at it. So he's going straight back to the people that have made the reports, going, come then, put your money where your mouth is, literally. Let's talk about it. Show me what you've done. Why didn't you come to me first so that I could make a statement? Why have you just gone out with it? And that's probably why he's banned them, because it's like, just come and talk and we can have my side of the story in your article if you want to do it that way.
Yeah.
But they chose not to. And I think that's probably what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
so it's going to rumble on for a long time, this, because it's all to do with court cases and things. And at some point, we'll get some sort of answer somewhere along the line. All I would say about Tony Bloom so far in his ownership is I would be absolutely gobsmacked if he has done anything that would put in jeopardy his ownership of his absolute love, Brighton Hove Albion.
I would say that he wouldn't have directly done anything. It's what he potentially and might have indirectly done, which is probably what this is all about.
Burden of proof, mate.
Exactly.
Burden of proof. He has made millions and millions and millions and almost billions of money in betting.
Kids, don't gamble. Don't gamble. It's not good for you. Because you end up buying a club like Brighton. It's the worst thing you can do.
But he has done it, and he has done it for years. And he has done certain things for years around gambling, around syndicates, around all those sorts of things. For suddenly something now to think, oh, as a billionaire, I want more money. I'm going to do this that's illegal. It just doesn't make any sense to do it in that sense. I just think it's a strong statement from Tony Bloom. I expect more information to come out over the next months, maybe years, I don't know, but we'll have to wait and see. But certainly at this moment, he's assuring Brighton fans that there's nothing to worry about.
And do you know what? I hope that that is the case. And just to clarify, we don't know.
We do not know
anything more than what's in the press. So we can't speculate either way.
And even though you were.
No, I wasn't.
You were?
No. I was playing devil's advocate, which is that I'm...
You're trying to stir the pot.
I'm telling you what I've read, and I'm asking you.
Well, I know what you've read because I read the same thing that we all have.
I'm not reporting news.
You're just stirring the pot. And nice try, but it's not going to happen.
Oh, it's the legal team telling us to move on.
The pot doesn't need stirring. We're already rubbish. So.
And that's it for another episode of Seagull Eagle. Thank you for listening.
Please make sure to follow the show so you don't miss the next episode when it drops. We'll be back next week to review the big game at Liverpool. Yeah, can't wait. And of course, Shelbourne and Man City games for Crystal Palace.
You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X. Just search Seagull Eagle and get the conversation started.
You can drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com.
and we'll see you next week. Until then,
Seagulls.